Green Bay Packers training camp begins on Monday, and our position-by-position preview series continues with the offensive line. To take an in-depth look at the group, our guest today is Mike Wendlandt of PackersTalk.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Kirvu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for training camp, and to do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone today.
Expert interview.
We have Mike Wendlandt of PackersTalk.com. Mr. Wendlandt, how you doing this morning?
I'm not too bad. Enjoying the weather before it gets too hot up here.
Sounds good to me. Mike, before we dig in, maybe you could just introduce yourself by telling us maybe how you became a Packers fan and maybe a little bit about the series you're doing right now at PackersTalk.com.
I'm Mike Wendlandt. I grew up a Packers fan from northern Wisconsin, the Wapaka, Stevens Point area. Still living there right now. So I didn't really have too much of a choice. And just really fell in love with the team in Super Bowl 31 and haven't really departed since. It's been quite the ride. Luckily for me, I was able to enjoy the glory years. I didn't have a chance to be part of the really down years. I was starting from Brett Favre, been to Rodgers. And also, if I guess through Packers Talk right now, I'm currently breaking down the depth chart position group by position group. I've done quarterbacks, backfield, receivers, tight ends, O-line, D-line, and linebackers. Everyone can look forward tomorrow to the secondary, maybe just corners, but right now I'm planning on doing both corners and safeties. And then I'm going to wrap it up next week with specialists, their strengths, weaknesses, what their role is, where I think they'll end up being, their best case, worst case scenarios, and really on how some of these guys shape up. Because there's a lot of these guys, people don't know who they are and what they're all about. And there's a lot of talent that's flying under the radar with this team.
Well, I think it's appropriate, seeing as you've already done the offensive line there. That's what we're going to talk about here, so we'll kind of lean on that, what you've done already at PackersTalk.com. Let's start our discussion today with David Bakhtiari. Do you think he's going to have a 2016 season that will make him one of the highest-paid left tackles in the NFL next year?
It all depends on how you want to consider highest paid. I think he's going to have a very, very good year, especially for only making around $700,000. But I don't think he's going to get quite like Joe Thomas money, which is at 11.5 for next year. I would say the year he'll have is going to be good. I think he gets around $7 million, maybe Jared Valtier money, because Bakhtiari's probably a guy where people are going to consider as what you see is what you get. They're not going to see any more much of a ceiling probably in free agency with him, whereas someone like Valtier or Joe Staley, people saw a lot more potential or untapped talent, especially in Valtier's case with his athleticism. Bakhtiari, as great of a receiver as he was and as good of a player as he is, people are probably also going to loop him in with Josh Sitton, saying Sitton may have covered up some of his weaknesses. So I'm really not sure where his pace is going to be. I would lean more on the $7 million a year type, kind of middle of the pack left tackle with the way the league is now. But we're still going to be a good pay for him, good pay jump, but not one of the highest paid left tackles.
It would certainly represent a nice raise for him, probably about tenfold over what he's making this year. That there's that to look forward to at least, but speaking of players with expiring contracts, I mean, what do you think happens with guards Josh Sin and TJ Lang? Can the Packers afford to keep both of them and Bakhtiari and JC Treader? I mean, what do they do with all these guys?
Best case scenario, I think two of them come back. That's too much money to probably tie up when you had to think about expiring contracts. Also with Eddie Lacy coming up. Yeah. I think of a lot of the younger guys are also coming up with contracts, guys like even like Micah Hyde, in a few years. Ted Thompson's such a long-term thinker that you really can only keep two of them. I would lean toward them keeping Bakhtiari and Lang right now. Sitton, as great a player as he's been in this, he'll be a Packer Hall of Famer very soon after he retires. He's just a guy who's probably going to get caught up in a numbers game. He's pushing 30, if not right over it right now. He's really, his back's starting to fade. He had to lose a little weight to be able to practice right now. It's his, obviously his toe thing has really still been kind of an issue. He's a guy who's been around for a long time. I think he can teach a lot of these young guys how to be a good pro and how to be the leader, and to give TJ Lang the chance to take over next year. Especially, I think a scenario that I've heard a lot and that actually sounds pretty realistic is getting Bakhtiari re-signed and then sliding him into guard in a sitting spot, and so you can have Jason Sprigg slot to left tackle next year. And it just to me it makes a lot of sense, especially when you think of that might allow them to save some money on David Bakhtiari as well.
I know David Bakhtiari doesn't like the sound of that. I know he's commented on that. Of course, he's not a coach, so we'll see what happens there. It almost brings a tear to my eye to think about the band breaking up a little bit in that sense. But obviously, something's got to give. But we'll worry about that when it comes to it. Mike, do you think Corey Linsley will be negatively impacted by missing a big portion of the offseason program this past spring?
Yeah, I've been looking at reports just before. Did they say what the injury was? Like everything I find was just undisclosed.
Yeah, no, because they don't have to talk about it in the offseason. We really don't know. All we know is he did miss time. We just don't know what for.
Yeah. So we'll find out on Monday then. I don't know how much of an impact it's going to be, just because a lot of the stuff was optional, and him at least being there, him at least being able to study the playbook and be at least around the other guys, I think will help a lot. His job is safe. I don't think you can replace the chemistry he has with those guys, especially TJ Lang. I don't think it'll affect him too much, as long as, especially with the 5 games in the preseason, that'll help him get back in the swing of things, get him back ready, prepared for the season, prepared for Jacksonville. And his strength is still there. He's still probably the strongest lineman on the team. So I don't think he's going to affect him too much. But you really never know until we see the pads go on for the first time.
And we only have a few days to wait until that. Talking about the rest of the starting offensive line, do you think Brian Bulaga can get through an entire season healthy? Because he's the type that always seems to miss some time year after year.
Yeah, at this point, the record's against him. I wouldn't expect to count on him for a full season anymore. All his injuries have been kind of fluky and just kind of weird. When you think of the tearing an ACL during family night and having, I think it was a hip injury and hand injuries, just every, it seems like every little thing that can possibly happen has happened to him as far as injuries go. I just wouldn't trust him. I'd say expect 13, maybe 14 games out of him. Get Treader ready, get Spriggs ready. If you need to, even get Kyle Murphy ready to slide out to right tackle. And plus, I think he also might be another left tackle if something happens to Bakhtiari. Like, it's just one of those things where I don't think you can counter Brian Bulaga right now, as good of a player as he is, to last full season. It's just there's too much of a record against him.
And I'm sure that's why they invested a draft choice into Jason Spriggs this past spring. We're talking to Mike Wendlandt of PackersTalk.com here at Railroad Central on a Friday morning. Mike, we talked about the starting offensive line. If we talk a little bit about the backups here. Last year, J.C. Treader played some left tackle in place of Bakhtiari. Do you think Treader will continue to back up multiple positions, or will he strictly be an interior player now that they added Jason Spriggs in the NFL draft? What's going to happen there?
Treader, I think it'll be also under his request too. I think they're gonna have him play everywhere. He'll probably be a left tackle. He'll probably play on the tackle as well as interior. He's their top backup at every position, I think, right now. He showed up very well against Washington in the playoff game last year on the left side. Spriggs is still pretty raw. He's still young. He needs some work on his technique and a little bit of his footwork. And so Treader, as the consummate pro, as that veteran guy who finally got to get a full season in, I think he's gonna be playing everywhere. I think he's gonna be the top right tackle backup. He'll be the top guard backup. He'll be the top center. Spriggs might jump him for the backup left tackle spot. And during the preseason, I don't know that for sure yet. But I definitely think he's got the feet, he's got the hands to be a good right tackle in this league, whether it's here, whether it's somewhere else. So I definitely think he's going to be, we're playing a little bit of everywhere, and he's going to work the most probably at guard and center, but don't be surprised to see him kick out to right tackle if Bulaga goes down.
Okay, how versatile do you think Jason Spriggs will be? Do you think the Packers will have him learn one tackle position, or will he back up both spots? Or maybe, how long will it take for him to learn both positions? Do they start with one and then, eventually get to another? How do you think that'll play out in training camp?
I think they're going to have him work at both tackles from everything I've heard and also from other speculation. Spriggs, he's a natural left tackle. That's the way that Lessism is. 6'6", 301, just a big guy, really with really good length. He really kind of dropped just because there are so many good tackles on the draft this year. I think, yeah, they'll have him at both spots. He'll be primarily probably a left tackle, because there's a good chance he's groomed to be either the replacement for Bakhtiari, or either this year or next year, or a couple years from now. He's definitely the future of the position, with what his athleticism stick dictates. But he'll definitely work at both in case something were to happen, in case Shredder's inside and then Blocker goes down, they're going to need him there. They love to cross train all the linemen too, so I wouldn't rule out a move inside as an occasional spurt, but he'll definitely be probably both tackle spots to start. And as far as how long it'll take him to adjust, I would say everything I've heard, so Schertz is a really good worker. He's 22, so he's got a lot of playing time, 3 or 4 year starter in college at Indiana. So I think maybe second, third game, I think he'll be pretty smoothly by the time first cuts hit. And by the time we get to the season, he'll be ready to at least see the field, if not ready to actually get extended playing time. That might have to wait till near the end of the year, and just getting used to the speed of the rushers, the speed of the opening punch from defensive linemen, as well as being able to react and counter moves from some of the really good defensive ends in this league.
Yeah, you have to think that they're counting on him at least to be part of the active roster, and maybe not a starter right away, but a part of that active roster by opening day. So
Look for
have
him
to
on
give,
special teams too.
The Packers gave Lane Taylor a multi-million-dollar contract in the offseason. Do you think he'll be the top backup at guard, or will Treader be that guy, or will someone else hold that role?
I think it's between those two, Taylor and Treader. They showed some faith in Lane Taylor, giving him that contract. I think it was 3 years, I think. But he's a guy. It's going to depend on probably the matchup. If it's going to be more of a speed defense, I'm thinking you'll see J.C. Treader out there, because he's a little bit of a better pulling guard, a little bit quicker, a little bit better off the ball. But Taylor is just a mauler, a pure run blocker. Held his own actually pretty well against guys like in St. Louis, and as later in the year, he did a pretty good job, especially on the right side. So I think he'll be against a power team. I think if you're playing someone like Minnesota or Chicago, he'll be the top backup at guard. But I think they're going to be rotating between him and Treader, just because Treader's athleticism is quite a bit better and fits better against those hybrid teams. So say if they're playing the Cardinals or Seattle, you'll probably see Treader in there. But against more of a power team, probably see Lane Taylor. It's I'd say it's probably pretty even right now, and if both go down, we'll see both of them. But I'd say Taylor with a strength in the run game is definitely going to be facing more against the really powerful teams.
Do you think it's possible Don Barclay is a better player another year removed from his torn ACL, or is he going to be the same player we saw last year? Because he kind of seems to be a guy on the roster bubble.
Yeah, he has to be better than last year. ACLs do take a longer time to heal than people think, especially if a place in a position like tackle, where your knees are going to be used so much more with the bend and with just the way everything goes. I think he will be better. I think it might be too little, too late with so much young talent on this team. I don't have him personally making the team. I think he ends up catching on with somewhere else and having still a pretty lengthy career yet, as long as no other injuries hit. I think just he's his feet his athleticism and feet and reaction time are not tackle worthy in the NFL right now. I don't think anymore. He started a couple years ago just out of necessity. He was solid, but he wasn't spectacular. Was more of just a guy, good locker room guy. But I just think at this point he's you I don't think you can trust him to be the top backup, especially with Spriggs and Treader and Lane Taylor I'll have seemed to be a little more trust from the team. And yeah, some other really good young guys who are more athletic, more talented than him. I don't think he's gonna be the same player just because that just didn't go well. But I do think he will be a guy who is on the bubble, who'll be one of the final cuts of camp. I think it's a 3 or 4 man battle for one last 1 or 2 man spots on the line. But he'll be better, but just not good enough, I don't think, to make the team.
So, among the players we haven't talked about yet, who do you think stands the best chance of making the roster? Is it Josh Walker, who was with the team last year? Is it Matt Rotherham, who was on the practice squad? Is it Kyle Murphy, who they invested a draft choice into? Or any of the undrafted rookies? Who kind of stands out to you?
I think Kyle Murphy's pretty safe, just because he's a natural right tackle who's probably going to work a lot at guard. I think a guy who was drafted later than a lot of people thought. I don't think there's any way he would make it to the practice squad, so I think he would make it. And Ted doesn't cut draft picks unless they're a Corey Rogers type failure. I think his spot's safe. That leaves me at 9, and then I have 10 linemen making the team. Rotherham and Walker are really close for me. I've been flip-flopping every day between which one to which, because Walker played really well against the Rams last year. Held his own against Aaron Donald, has shown very good strength, good length, good size, gets off the ball really well, seems to have chemistry with guys like Corey Linsley. But Rotherham, such a highly touted guy last year, he's working at center now as well as guard, which I think is giving him the edge. So I have Rotherham making it right now over Walker, and Walker making it to the practice squad. Just due to versatility of things and how much Coach McCarthy really likes having guys who can play in different spots in the line. And Rotherham got better as last year's training camp went on too. He's a massively strong player, a little very similar to Lane Taylor, maybe a little more athletic, a little stronger, but still needs to tap a little bit more of his potential. So I think Rotherham's the guy. Rotherham and Murphy are the final two guys to make the team. Maybe not always active every week, unless they pass rule that makes it all 53 are active. But and then Josh Walker just on the outside makes it to the practice squad because the new rule, he still has eligibility for that after even though he played all last year in 13 games. It's really interesting. And as far as undrafted guys, a guy to keep an eye on is Josh James, big offensive lineman from I think Carroll, from Carroll College from Montana. He's 6'5", 314, All American there. I think Division III. Not a bad pass blocker. He's also a good athlete. Jumped 30 inches during his pro day. But he did play at a small school, so we don't know what he could do. But he's a guy who could make it to the practice squad or make it to final cuts. But he just got just to keep an eye on as far as could be of someone like the Josh Walker of this year, who kind of comes out of nowhere to make the team.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun to watch these guys in training camp. That's what training camp's for, to see what they got. So we don't have long to wait. Thank you so much, Mike, for joining us today to kind of preview the offensive line. Greatly appreciate it. We'll keep an eye out for your series at PackersTalk.com with the secondary coming up. We'll send people there to check it out, all right?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. Mike Wendlandt of PackersTalk.com joining us here at Railbird Central on a Friday morning. Glad to have him joining us. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
That's a little bit loud. But anyway, okay, so Thursday, the Packers held their annual shareholders meeting. And the big news coming out of yesterday's event is that Packers president Mark Murphy confirmed the Packers would like to host the NFL draft in either 2019, ideally in 2019, but would also like to do it in 2020 or 2021 as well, if that's not feasible right away. As Rich Ryman of the Green Bay Press Gazette noted right here on Railbird Central, our last episode previewing the shareholders meeting, 2019 would be ideal because that'll be the 100th anniversary of the establishment of the Packers organization. So they'd love to celebrate that and kind of have the whole NFL world kind of acknowledge that. And that'll be a good thing for pro football in general. There's been no word on when a decision will be made. And in fact, they haven't even said where next year's NFL draft will be yet, although Murphy indicated Philadelphia is apparently the front runner. I've said all along, once the Titletown District is complete, that will help the Packers so much more. And not just because they're building a hotel, although that will help. It's because they host so many outdoor activities now and displays in conjunction with the NFL draft. And some of that can be held in the new Titletown District. This has pretty much been the trend ever since the draft went from New York 2 years ago to Chicago. These past 2 years, they've held, so much in Millennium Park in Chicago, where there's, that's where their draft town is, and they have all these Hall of Fame displays and just all sorts of stuff and outdoor bars and, where people can watch the draft and there's activities for kids and all sorts of stuff. That goes along with the NFL draft. I think, when the new Titletown District is in place, that's where they can have some of these things. Maybe not all of them. Maybe some of it's in the parking lots for Lambeau Field or inside the Lambeau Field atrium. All sorts of different things they can do there. But yeah, I think, I think it's an inevitability. Murphy talked about how the whole, hotel room thing works against the Packers, just like it does the Super Bowl. But I think, for the NFL draft, there's going to be enough. When you spread it out over 3 days, I think there's going to be enough. The Packers host regular season NFL games. They fill a stadium of, what is it, over 80,000 people now. I think they can, host the NFL draft, of which the attendance, at least inside the draft itself, which would probably be held in the Rush Center, is going to be less than 10,000. So, I mean, consider that. I mean, they host a football game that hosts 80,000. The draft will host 10,000. I'll be there. Will be more people outside and, watching in bars and things like that. But still, I think they can do it, especially, once you start adding up hotel rooms, not just in Green Bay, but in the Fox Valley or in the surrounding area. I think they'll be all right. I think they'll be all right. So, well, we're talking years down the road, but it's fun to talk about this kind of stuff now, as Murphy comments on these things at the shareholders meeting. He also said the team would like to host more college football games at Lambeau Field, and I think that would be nice to see. Of course, they're kind of getting back into that this year, hosting their first major college football game when Wisconsin hosts LSU. I guess the Packers host them, really, but it's Wisconsin versus LSU. I know I'm going to be in attendance at that game. But Mark Murphy really didn't say much more than that, other than to mention the obstacles that need to be overcome, like setting up an affiliation with the conference. So he just said they'd like to do it. Nothing is set in stone at this point, but I think that would be great. As the Packers, they always look to do something to bring in more money flow to both the organization and the town as a whole, between football games or concerts or, just other, events that are kind of held at Lambeau Field as a facility. Mark Murphy also became the first Packers official to publicly comment on the PED investigation into Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, apparently in a press conference after the shareholders meeting. Although, once again, he offered little we don't already know, other than to say the only role the Packers will play is to communicate with the NFL and set up the interviews. Word is, Matthews and Peppers will be interviewed on the first day of training camp, although I'm still not sure whether that's the first day they report or the first day they practice, of which there is a difference. Players report on Monday for meetings, physicals, etc., and then they practice the next day for the first time. I'm not sure what it is. I haven't seen a report out there that's clarified that yet. So, if there is, feel free to correct me. But we're kind of waiting on that, and maybe we probably won't have long to wait till we find out soon. Of course, I don't know how willing anybody's going to be to speak about these matters on record, that, you know, private, you know, meetings that are going to take place in private, I don't think people are going to be too forthcoming about what's said on either side, either the player side or the NFL side. I mean, maybe we'll get some basic stuff out of it. Yeah, I mean, everybody's kind of waiting on pins and needles with that to a little bit extent, just because there's some big names, Matthews and Peppers, although nothing, you know, at this point at least is imminent in terms of a suspension or anything like that. In other Packers news, that was not part of the shareholders meeting, but, you know, since our last episode of Railbird Central, the team finally filled out their 90-man roster by signing cornerback Warren Gatewood on Wednesday. And if that name sounds familiar, you may remember outlets reporting the Packers were going to sign Gatewood as an undrafted free agent, but those contracts are always pending a physical in the aftermath of the NFL draft, like the undrafted rookies. And Gatewood acknowledged in an article with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that he's been dealing with a hamstring injury, that he's been rehabbing since the draft, basically. So, you know, I don't know if he took a physical and failed it. That hasn't really been reported. But we know he has been dealing with an injury. But anyway, yeah, I'm sure he's past it now, or looks like he's over it at least. I don't know if he's going to took a physical already and going to take another at the start of training camp. I'm not sure. It would have been nice for Gatewood to take part in the offseason program, but at least he'll be there for day one of training camp, and the Packers will have their full complement of 90 players now. The Packers apparently reportedly put Gatewood through a tryout on Wednesday and did not sign either a kicker or a punter, whom they also brought in for tryouts, as reported by Aaron Wilson of the National Football Post. But I don't think that'll disappoint anybody, seeing as they already have two punters under contract and Mason Crosby. While it would be nice to have a camp leg in there, it's certainly not necessary. And you know, Crosby did everything last year and can do it again. So welcome to the newest member of the Green Bay Packers, Warren Gatewood. And that leads us into the next segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, today on Friday, the back-to-football events continue a day after the shareholders meeting, with the 1K Kids Run, an annual event being held Friday evening, which is a precursor to the Packers 5K on Saturday morning. So kids on Friday night, adults, well, I suppose kids could do the 5K too, but it's mostly really young kids that do the 1K. But this is an annual event that's been going on, I don't know, a little over 5 years or so. It's been nice to kind of, you know, mark the beginning of training camp or just before training camp to kind of kick off the season a little bit with an active event that, you know, snakes through Lambeau Field. If you take part in the run, you actually run a lap around the stadium. So that's really cool. So that's taking part this weekend, the 5K on Saturday morning. Then Saturday evening, the Packers hold their Hall of Fame induction ceremony, with the first members of Super Bowl XLV being inducted, offensive lineman Chad Clifton and safety Nick Collins, both multi-time Pro Bowlers, are going to join a select fraternity. So congratulations to them for joining, being inducted shortly into the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame tomorrow, as we sit here broadcasting on a Friday. And so does former Packers broadcaster Russ Winnie as well, another member of this year's enshrinee class into the team's Hall of Fame. So that being held Saturday evening. Over the weekend, Aaron Rodgers takes part in the American Century Championship Golf Tournament, which actually starts Friday after a couple days of practice rounds he had previously taken part in. Like I, you know, introduced you to the last episode of Railbird Central. These can you can watch him or watch the event at least on both NBC and the NBC Sports Network. So that'll maybe give you a little bit of your Packers fix over the weekend if you're absolutely salivating for football. But this is it. This you only got to get through one more weekend. So enjoy it. Because it's the grind starts Monday, as players report, and we'll have practice to talk about as of Tuesday, which will be right appropriate for us our on Railbird Central next Wednesday. We can talk about the action on the field. So again, not much longer to wait. We'll see you, folks. That'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to our guest, Mike Wendlandt of PackersTalk.com, for joining us on the show today. It was good to talk a little offensive line with him as we continue our position-by-position preview series here, taking a look at the Packers roster. We'll be back again on Monday with new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time, which is the live edition of the show, podcasted and on demand later in the day for your listening pleasure, whenever you may so choose to listen to it. My call to action is always as usual. If you've not done so already, please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So if you had to do us a solid, go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV, it'll pop right up. Give us that 5-star rating and a brief little review, because we would greatly, greatly appreciate it, because it helps get word out about the show, and that's what we want. People finding this show and listening to the best Packers podcast on the internet, and the longest tenured Packers podcast on the internet. Nearing 700 episodes here. We're at like 680 some right now. So excited to get to 700 really soon. That'll do it, folks. We'll see you. Have a good weekend. And we'll talk on the day players report on Monday. I leave you today with a song by Keller Williams called Kidney in a Cooler on Psi Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go, Pack, go. Thank you.